Hello and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 10, Supercharging the Conflict in Your Story. Welcome back, everyone, for another week of story structure and story analysis. This podcast, while it normally comes out on Tuesdays, will be coming out tomorrow on Wednesday, as I'm putting the finishing touches on some roadmaps for some people, and also doing the final edit of the character class that Melanie and I did last month. The subject that I cover in this week's podcast about supercharging your conflict, I was going to write an article about this week, but after our analysis of Kramer versus Kramer last night, there was something that Dramatica co-creator Chris Huntley brought up during our analysis that kind of blew me away and caused me to look at story forms in a different way, so I wanted to cover that in this week's article. So I will eventually write some more about supercharging your conflict and pitfalls to avoid when you are working with Dramatica, especially if it's your first time in there. So eventually I'll write up the article that I talked about on the podcast this week, and towards the end of this week, look for that article on Kramer versus Kramer and a new way of looking at the story form. If you haven't participated ever in the Dramatica users group, you're more than welcome to. Just go to dramatica.com/community/usersgroup for more information. What we do is once a month we get together and analyze a film, all different kinds of genres. Tonight is, I guess, family drama. Last month was Sophie's Choice, real happy pair of films. One month we'll do animation, another month we'll do an action-adventure, the next month we'll do romance, and then the next month we'll do an Academy Award winner. The point is, regardless of genre, in those great stories you will find a solid story form from a Dramatica point of view. We did start broadcasting them live through Google Hangouts about 3 years ago with Shawshank Redemption, so you can find all of these on YouTube. Just search for Dramatica Users Group. I should also mention, too, if you don't know, there is a great discussion board on the Dramatica site that I run, discuss.dramatica.com. You'll want to go there if you have any questions about Dramatica or you just want to join the community and see what's going on. It's a great chance to get input from writers and other consultants who use the software in a practical application and use it in a day-to-day process, so you can see how to use it in your own work. Okay, before we get to this week's topic about supercharging the conflict in your story, what I want to do is do a little bit of follow-up. So yes, Narrative First is just like the big boys now. We got follow-up. The first would be the link to the analysis of Piper in the show notes last week. That was a quick one. A little bit of a problem with the URL there. That's been fixed. Last week we talked about Batman versus Superman versus Deadpool, and I brought up the concept of melodrama. And the idea that melodrama, from my point of view, is when you have emotions that aren't tied to structure. To me, that just makes the most sense. That's the cleanest way of understanding it. Talked to Melanie about melodrama, and she gave me the official Dramatica view on it, and I just wanted to share with you the basic idea behind it so that you can get an idea of where she's coming from. So in Melanie's estimation, melodrama is when the protagonist and the main character are in the same player, and the antagonist and the influence character are in the same player. And the problem with that is you have the logistic thread of the overall story and the passionate thread of the relationship story just exist between two people, which is very limiting. So the fallout from that is if you have really exciting storytelling in one thread, like let's say the overall story through line, it can actually distract from any kind of gap or any hole that you might have in the relationship story through line, and it'll work as kind of a bridge over that and kind of seal it up, and it will seem like it actually works in the other through line when really there's a giant hole there. So by collapsing the argument into just these two people, both the logistical argument and the emotional argument into these two people, you're basically just covering up fragments of stories in the other through line, and you're making up for any shortcomings. And a part two for melodrama is when you combine that with just directly facing the issue versus the counterpoint. You know, in every through line there is one issue, which could be self-interest, and the counterpoint would be morality. So if you just have the argument of self-interest versus morality, and that's what you actually have in your story, and you just beat people over the head with it, then you're James Cameron. Or you could be more subtle about it and more sophisticated, like perhaps in Kramer versus Kramer, and you use the other two items within the quad. So in that quad of self-interest and morality, you would have approach and attitude. So you use those two to describe self-interest and morality, and you kind of talk about the relative positive or negative values of self-interest and morality as seen in light of attitude and approach. So people's attitudes and their approaches towards doing things, are they more self-interest motivated or more doing what's best for others? And you show how that, how their attitudes and their approaches, you show how that proves your thematic argument of your story. You don't just keep beating people over the head. You just can't go around killing people. Okay. So part two was comparing the issue and counterpoint right against one another. And part three is when you draw all the characters as stick figures. So you have people that are either all bad or all good or all logic or all skeptical. So you roll that up with posing the issue against the counterpoint, and then you put the protagonist, the main character, in one player, and the antagonist and the influence character in one player, and you have melodrama, which is awesome. I was hoping, I could have sworn that that's what she had said, or I thought my definition of melodrama was what she had taught me, but I guess that was wrong. I like my definition better because, one, it's cleaner, and two, it makes more sense practically because from my point of view, I don't feel like Batman Begins or The Dark Knight is melodrama. I have a very negative understanding of melodrama. So in my mind, you know, the definition, a sensational dramatic piece with exaggerated characters and exciting events intended to appeal to the emotions. Okay, that to me is, that sounds like Batman versus Superman. And that sounds like emotion that's not tied to any kind of structural items. So I see what Melanie was saying is melodrama is more pitfalls to avoid rather than actual melodrama. Because in Batman Begins you have Bruce as the main character and protagonist, and then you have Ra's al Ghul, Ducard, as the influence character slash antagonist. So by Melanie's definition, that would be melodramatic. And then in The Dark Knight, you have same main character and protagonist in Batman, and then the Joker is both antagonist and influence character. So again, I don't know if that necessarily makes something melodramatic. I think it would make more sense to think of heavy-handed emotions that aren't necessarily tied to anything structurally, like it's not tied to the argument. It's just there as an emotion for people to feel. So that's the wrap-up on melodrama there. And speaking of Batman Begins, last week wrapped up the analysis of Batman Begins with looking at backstory that isn't backstory and using that first film as an example of that, where the first hour was actually part of the story form. It's actually part of the argument that was being made. It was just woven in a way that it felt like it was a flashback sequence. But if you unraveled it and played it all out in sequence, the actual chronological order of events, you would actually see a dramatic story form, starting with signpost 1, going to signpost 2, moving to signpost 3, and then on into signpost 4. What was interesting about that article is I actually got a chance to write a lot about Memento, which is one of my favorite films, and something I always wanted to write about in regards with Dramatica, because the story form there, again, same thing, if you laid it out in the chronological order of events and not mixed it back and forth in the way that it was presented to you, you would also see a story form. And I actually went through and logged how the main character through line bounces back and forth between the first signpost and the fourth signpost. You know, his first signpost is memories, and the fourth signpost is contemplations. So in the beginning black and white sequences, beginning meaning chronological time, he's remembering all the things that have gone on up until that point. And then in the color contemplation part, that's where he's deciding what he's supposed to do with John G. So the sequence of events is about 1-4, 1-4, 1-4, and then it goes to 2-3, maybe back to 2, and then plays out 3-4. So if you've ever wanted to see how Dramatica sees Memento, you want to check out that article. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. Last week also was the super amazing Story Lab research out of Vermont that found the 6 emotional arcs in every story. So it's really super easy. You just pick one of those arcs, and you just write that in your story, and you'll have a great story. I did think that there might have been a link to the structural sequence of signposts. That's what they're actually seeing when they're seeing these 6 emotional arcs. But then when I wrote the Batman Begins analysis, it occurred to me that they're just looking at the sequence of events as it is told to you. So they're just looking at the story weaving. So you're not really seeing, you're seeing how it's presented, but you're not actually seeing the argument that's being made. So I'm not sure if that's entirely true. So I'll put the show notes for that. It also reminded me of this research that was done, I think, 3 years ago in an article I wrote about screenwriting beating the odds, where they were researching what is essentially amounts to subjective data. You know, one of their things was that a cursed superhero never sells as well as a guardian superhero, one like Superman, who acts as a protector, which is completely ridiculous because I think Batman is a cursed superhero and probably outsells Superman 50-1. But that's the great part about Dramatica, is it's not opinion, and it's not subjective, and it's not open to audience tastes. It's completely objective in the way that it looks at story, which has always been the thing that's appealed to me about it, because it's not something that is entirely felt. It's more the building blocks of the story that you're trying to make. I mean, you can use other tools and other maps to kind of bring it to life, but if you want to actually know why your story is not working, then really Dramatica is the only thing right now that can help you out with that. And then I just published it today, but I actually wrote it over the weekend. I completely forgot to do the Through Line Thursday from last week because I was out sick last week. I chose Nightcrawler, which is a really great film from Dan Gilroy, brother of Tony Gilroy, who did Michael Clayton. Apparently those kids can really write. Must be a fun family at the Thanksgiving table, arguing over who's main character and who's the influence character of their stories. I wish I could be there. I really like Nightcrawler. When I do my workshops, my quarterly workshops, I always choose one film as kind of the backdrop of that weekend. And the workshops last year, I used Nightcrawler, which worked really great. I went up to Iowa to do a writer's workshop over the weekend last summer, and we did Nightcrawler, and it worked out great. And I fully admit to having stolen the idea from McKee from his class on Casablanca, which has been going on for 80 years. So I fully admit to stealing that idea, and but I do promise that the film will be changed every year so that if you ever wanted to come back, you don't have to sit through the same exact thing over and over again. I wanted to slip in a little bit of an analysis for this week, and this week's film is Angry Birds. I do have a bit of a personal connection to the film. One of the directors, Clay Cadis, is a close personal friend of mine. We both hired into Disney at the same time, way back on Pocahontas, and our careers have basically been the same. He was one of the supervising directors on Tangled and directed a major motion picture this summer, and I'm recording podcasts in my closet. So our lives have pretty much turned out the same. But that said, I did have some problems with Angry Birds, with the story. Not sure why he didn't call me up and ask me for help. Sure he was too busy flying around the world while I was here writing about story forms. That said, so yes, I love the animation, which I assume Clay had more of an impact on. But there was a problem with the story, which I'll get into in my analysis. And the biggest problem with this story is the same problem that I had with Big Hero 6. If you've seen Disney's Big Hero 6, that was the film in between, or actually I guess it was after Frozen and before Zootopia, right? Where it was like San Francisco and Tokyo mashed up together. The biggest problem with that story is it takes 30 minutes before it even actually starts, right? You have that whole opening prologue where the two brothers are getting to know each other just enough so that one can get blown up, and it takes 30 minutes for it to actually start, for there to actually be, it takes 30 minutes for an actual inequity to be there, for something to actually be off. And Dramatica sees the story starting as when the inequity begins, when you feel that sense of separateness. Up until that point, you could remove everything that happened before it, and it wouldn't change the meaning of the story for anyone who was watching it, which means it's actually inconsequential. Now, there might be other through lines that start before that time. You know, conceptually, the all four through lines are supposed to happen at the same time. You know, this is supposed to be a single human mind trying to solve a problem. So main character, influence character, relationship story, and overall story are actually supposed to happen all at the same time, all at once. But we can't do that, and we're not robots. We're creating art. So what you do is you stagger them, right? So in Star Wars, the overall story starts with Darth boarding that ship illegally, but the main character through line doesn't start until about 25 minutes into it, right? When Luke finally gets that message. And then the influence character through line comes a little bit after that, and then the relationship story starts. And then you have a story that's locked in. Other films, they'll start right away. You know, you get the main character and overall story at the same time. With something like Big Hero 6, you had nothing, maybe a little bit of setup here and there, but you had no real inequity driving anything until 30 minutes into it. And unfortunately, that was the same problem with Angry Birds. And what happens is you get really fidgety. So, yes, there's great animation, great characterization. I thought Mighty Eagle was fantastic with Tyrion Lannister voicing him. I thought his character was awesome. But you can distract for only so long with great animation and great characterization before people start to get bored because there's really no story that's happening. So the biggest problem with Angry Birds is that the story didn't even start until an hour into it. I actually was checking my watch, and once they finally abducted the little kids, the little piggies, that's when the story starts, and that was an hour into the film, which is crazy because up until that time, you're looking around at everybody wondering what's going on. I mean, there's great main character through line, and then possibly with the eagle, there could have been an influence character, but that never really played out, and they never really developed a relationship story. But the biggest problem is that that overall story didn't even start. And I understand why they would do it, because, you know, there's only so much attacking a city that you can do, and you're not going to do that for an hour and a half. But there was ways that you could have re-engineered some of the through lines that went on and perhaps built out an influence character for Red and built up a relationship story between them and worked in the abduction earlier and, you know, used other signposts in that overall story to kind of pan out so that the last half would be, you know, doing to obtaining. You'd probably have, you know, the war would start halfway through. But them just arriving doesn't really create an inequity, because them arriving and manipulating the people around them, well, that's a manipulation story, right? That would be an overall story in psychology. But in reality, the overall story is going to be inactivity. Because we're talking about Angry Birds here, and we're talking about birds smashing down castles. And so when you don't have that activity, inequity happening until 55, 57 minutes into the film, you're going to have an audience that is restless and waiting for the story to actually start. That's why you want to be clear about the context of the conflict that you're looking at. You know, you can't start with one and then switch to the other without fear of losing that story mind that you're trying to create in the minds of the audience. So again, I had fun at the film. Kids loved it. But when I look back on it now, and this is why I wanted to do it a couple months after it was out, when I look back on it now, I have no idea what the story's about, right? I could tell you up and down what happened in Batman Begins or The Dark Knight. I don't quite remember what happens in the third Dark Knight film because that story's broken. But those first two I can remember, and that's usually a good sign that there's a concrete story there, is if you can, months or years later, remember exactly what happened. So with Angry Birds, it's been 2 months, and I can't remember. I know they did some therapy sessions, and the eagle went to the bathroom in the lake, and then there was a bunch of fighting at the end. But I really don't know anything else that happened before, and that's because that story form was broken, and that message that was trying to be communicated was garbled. You know, there were holes in it, and it failed to maintain the carrier wave of information so that it would lock inside the mind of the audience member so that they would be able to remember it years on down the road. So if you want your stories to work, you want to make sure you understand the context of the conflict that's in there, which is what we're going to talk about today on the show. And also you want to make sure that you don't start the inequity of that conflict an hour into it. You want to make sure you get it started, at least get it started within 10, 15 minutes so that people know what to expect and what's to come. I haven't seen Secret Life of Pets, but I did have family members who saw it who aren't completely familiar with Dramatica but know enough about it and felt that there were a bunch of stories going on. And it's, you know, once it was told to me, that's exactly what it sounded like. It sounded like there were three or four different competing stories going on at once and no real interwoven thread that weaves them all together. And that's what Dramatica does, is it helps you solidify your story form and weave those different through lines together so that you have an idea of what it is you're trying to say, right? It brings everything together and gives it all purpose into one creative whole. Like one holistic point of view that you're trying to get across, or one message, I guess, is what you're trying to get across. That's what it can do. You can have tons of different stories going on within a work, like Lord of the Rings, or any kind of other kind of epic storytelling, like Game of Thrones, that kind of situation. But, you know, in a 90-minute animated feature, you probably want to stick to just to one, unless you're Andrew Stanton around 2004 and you can do that thing that you did with Finding Nemo. So yeah, I had fun at Angry Birds. I still feel like you should see it. Everybody should rent it 500 times and buy it, no matter, you know, what I say here. Actually, you know what? You should watch it so that it's a good lesson, so you can see what it's like to have to wait an hour for a story to actually start. It's a great example of that. And if you like the game, you should check it out for sure. So this week what I wanted to talk about was supercharging your conflict, which is kind of a bit of a link bait there as far as the terminology. There's some truth to it, because with everybody that I work with, and then stuff that I read on the discussion boards that people are struggling with when they're writing their stories, they feel like they're encoding conflict just because they're filling out the boxes in Dramatica, but really they're missing what is actually supposed to be in there. And I admit that a lot of the documentation doesn't do a very good job of explaining it. It's hidden in there if you look in the contextual examples. For each story point, you can actually see where there's conflict in there, where there's inequity in the story points. But it's never really addressed in the story query in a way that makes sense. So I'm hoping that this will help you out. I'm trying to help out people who are new to Dramatica so they can get a better idea of what it is they're supposed to do with it. So when you look at a story point in Dramatica, like let's say the main character problem, there are three parts to it that you want to encode, right? So the story forming part is when you come up with a story form, or you figure out what it is you want to say. And then the second part is the story encoding, where you take that story form and you come up with an encoding part of it. And this is a structuralist approach to writing, right? There's two different camps. There's the structuralists, who I'm definitely in that camp, where you want to know what it is you are going to write, right? The whole site is called Narrative First, because I've worked in animation for 20 years, and I know what a nightmare it is to be on a production that doesn't actually have a story, and then you figure it out at the end. So my whole purpose is to kind of give more of a structuralist approach to it. And then there are other people who are more organic, I guess you could say creative, but that doesn't mean the structuralists aren't creative, but more, you know, fly by the seat of your pants, and then work your way back to a structure. There's no right way or wrong way, but it's just, so when I'm talking about the sequence of events, I'm just talking about the structuralist way, and you would just reverse them if you're coming from an organic point of view. So you do the story forming, and then you go about story encoding. And so let's say your story form has a main character problem of pursuit. So there's three parts of it that you want to look at. You have the through line, which is the main character. So, you know, every story point has a point of view, and it will actually read differently depending on that point of view. So the main character will be a very intimate look at a problem. The influence character, you're looking at somebody else who's wrecking havoc on the world around them. And then you have the relationship story, which is not either of them, it's both of them, if that makes sense. So it's the relationship's problem. And that's always the hardest one for people to get to. And then the overall story, which is, you know, they, like just looking at a whole group of people from a distance, which is usually the most boring one to do because it's the most obvious and the easiest and what most people think about when they think of story. So you have that through line, that's the first part, right? So you have the main character. And then you break down the second part, which is the problem, and that is the appreciation. So if you've probably never heard this, unless you've been around Dramatica, but if you've been to other narrative theories or whatever, you never heard the word appreciation. But the idea is that's the audience or the author appreciating the point of inequity there, the point of conflict right there. So you're appreciating what the problem looks like here. So that's the main character problem. If you're looking at the concern, you're appreciating what the concern is from that through line. So that's why it's called the appreciation. It took me a couple years to even figure out what that meant, and then it was explained to me and it made perfect sense, so hopefully I saved you some time. And then you have the last bit, which is the structural item, which is either the element or the variation or the type or the domain, just depending on what level you're looking at. So for here, it's an element, it's kind of at the character level. So you have the main character problem of pursuit. So you put all those three together and you build a context for the conflict within that story point. So that story point is defining a bit of the inequity that's there at the center of the story seen from a particular point of view. And those three create that context. So again, there is no conflict without context. So when I meet with people and we sit down and we go over their main character through line, because that's what the one I usually like to start out with, they will see main character problem of pursuit and they will write really quickly, Mary pursues her dream job and call it a day. And that's not really fulfilling the part that you need to do. You need to see pursuit in the context of the appreciation in the through line. So I need to see pursuit in the context of a problem and also see it in the context of the through line. So first, looking at the through line, this pursuing a dream is a problem for her personally. So it's not going to be a problem for everybody else. It might affect people that she cares about, and then that's a problem for her personally. But it's not a problem that other people are dealing with in this story. So we could try and make that a little more personal for her. So Mary's ambitions towards achieving her dream job isolate her from the family she loves. All right, now that sounds great, right? Mary's ambitions towards achieving her dream job isolate her from the family she loves. Oh, all right, well, that must be a problem. I've got conflict. I can move on to the next one. Wrong. You still need to encode the actual story point there, right? You don't have anything there. You have the potential for conflict. You have a trailer for conflict, but no real concrete evidence of a problem to contend with. So why is it that painful? Some people are okay with being isolated from the family they love, right? So you need to define why it's a personal problem for Mary. It may seem obvious to you because you're making all kinds of assumptions, but when you make assumptions, you know what happens when you assume? No, when you make assumptions, you are not actually encoding the story. You're not doing the work that you need to do to actually get that story down. You're setting yourself up for trouble later because you think you've got something down and you really don't have anything. So you're really actually just wasting your time. You don't even need dramatic. You just make stuff up. So you need to have some kind of inequity in there, some imbalance. Okay, it's okay. She loves her family. That's fine. But like I said, some people are okay with that and some people can balance that away, justify it away, and they're okay. This is an actual problem for her. Mm-hmm. So what if we tried Mary's ambitions towards achieving her dream job in the city, isolate her from the family she loves, distracting her from focusing on work with images of their grief and loneliness? All right, it's a little different there, right? So she actually wants to do more work, but these kids keep getting in the way. But at least now we have conflict, and now I know where she's coming from, and there's actual scenes. I got personal pain. I know what she's dealing with and where she's coming from. And we have scenes that we can actually start writing out that you can imagine of Mary trying to work hard on a project late at night, and then images of her kids keep popping in up into her head and screwing up her assignment. You know, maybe she's an artist and she starts screwing up her drawings. Guilt wrecks her artistic vibe. Now you've got a story. You know, when you had Mary pursues her dream job, it's like, okay, where do I go from there? And that's why you do all this work with Dramatica, and then you sit down to write your story, and you're like, okay, what do I do with all this stuff now? Okay, the reason why you don't know what to do with what you have is because you have nothing. So what you need to do is actually encode problems into those story points. So many writers new to Dramatica just do that. They just do the bare minimum. And then they wonder why they wasted all their time and effort. Do you see the difference between the two? Between Mary just pursuing her dream job, and then her ambitions to achieve her dream job in the city, isolating her from her family, and then making images pop up in her head, making it impossible for her to do that work? That difference works because there are two things that can't exist in the same space. You can't be at work chasing that dream if you also care about your child's sadness enough to want to do something about it. You can either not care or you can not pursue, but you can't pursue and want to help at the same time. That's where people get torn. That's where they feel that inequity, right? That imbalance. And that's where they have to figure out what they're going to do. You know, she'll build up all kinds of stuff on top of that. And then when she gets at the end to the dilemma, she'll have to decide which one to take. That's what you want for a story point at every single level. Which brings us to the second part of supercharging your conflict, which is something I wrote about a while back in Understanding Dramatica's Complex Terminology Made Easier, which is a huge mouthful, so hopefully supercharging your conflict will actually bring people in a little bit more. But those story points from problem to issue to concern to domain, those are all problems all the way up. You could substitute the word problem for each one of those, and you would still have the same thing. They're just different ways of looking at a problem, different magnification on the same thing. So think of magnification on a microscope, and you're just twisting the knob to either move in closer or pull yourself out. You know, the domain is just a huge way of looking at the problem, whereas the problem that we just dealt with Mary is a very small portion of it. The reason why this works is because Dramatica will maintain and pull in all the story points and allow you to use them in a way that you need to in order to tell the argument that you want. If you encode the problem and you encode the inequity in the through line, the story form will pull it all together and make it make sense to the audience. All you have to do is worry about a problem. So if you have a character who's got, let's do something besides pursuit, let's do certainty, okay? Everybody does pursuit, that's the easiest thing in the world. So let's try something a little bit more difficult. Let's do certainty. And they have a main character, this is the main character through line, this is Aaron, and he's got a problem of certainty in the domain of manipulation or way of thinking or psychology, right? So the way he goes about thinking about certainty is really screwing up with his life. So when you sit there to encode the domain, you know, at the manipulation level, just think of it the same way we just did with the main character problem of pursuit. This is a main character problem of manipulation. So let's say Aaron is a sarcastic person, always keeping people at bay. No one likes to hang out with them. I'm sure you know sarcastic people, the way they talk, the way they make jokes about everything, always is very off-putting. But again, that's not enough, right? Aaron is sarcastic and keeps people at bay. Who cares? Maybe he's okay with that. But it's a problem for Aaron because the people beat him up for his stupid jokes and because no one ever takes him seriously at work and he's passed up several times for a job he really badly wants. So there we have a main character problem of manipulation. And now we move down to the concern of conceiving. Okay, how do I encode a concern of conceiving? I have no idea how to do that. So you want to look at a main character problem of conceiving. So does that mean he's having trouble coming up with things? No. I mean, it could be, but not in this case. Maybe his main character problem of conceiving is getting the idea that he is the catch of the year. He wants people to get the idea that he is the catch of the year. So instead of going out and making friends, he's going to go the passive-aggressive route. He's going to go to the gym, become an expert in locally sourced food, tweeting about all his intellectual conquests and the books he's read and the plays he's gone to, thinking that this will somehow win friends and influence people. But again, all it does is drive them away as they can smell the desperation. Now this sounds a little bit like the one above about how it keeps people at bay, but now I've made it a little more concrete by showing that it reeks of desperation, and he feels more desperate about it. So far we've encoded the manipulation and the conceiving, and now in between the conceiving and the certainty is permission. So a level in between those two is where you would find the issues, the variation level, permission. So how can permission be a problem? Right? Permission sounds more like an issue, which is actually what it is, a thematic issue, what people can and can't do. You can feel the theme in that. But Aaron is hurt, and so what he's hurt by the fact that people see him as desperate. And he's hurt because people are beating him up, obviously, and because he's been passed up at work. So as a way of dealing with that, let's say he withholds permission for people to get near him. Maybe he's more proactive on that and won't let people go through his files or collaborate with him on things that he's working on. So you may think, all right, well, is this just more of him keeping people at bay? No, let's make it more internal because it's about him. This makes him think of other people as pawns, right? This is way of thinking. So this is where you're going to show how his psychology is screwed up for him. Because he won't let people come in, he's withholding that permission, he starts to think of other people as pawns that are just tools there to help him get done what he needs to get done. And that they're disposable when he doesn't need them anymore. And when people feel that way, when they feel like they're disposable and not needed, and they can't do what they want to do, they leave. So his roommate will leave, his girlfriend will leave, and again, he won't have that source of support that he really wants. And then finally, we have the problem of certainty. So we've done the problem of manipulation, the problem of conceiving, the problem of permission, and now the problem of certainty. And so Aaron's going to be the kind of person that has to know everything about someone before they can even get close to him, because he doesn't want to get hurt, right? So he has to be absolutely certain about all of it. Maybe in the backstory he was hurt and this was his way of dealing with it, so he's developed this problem of certainty. And he has to be absolutely certain, which means he asks 20 questions of everything, which is not so much off-putting to other people, but it's mentally exhausting for him. And he can't stop himself because he's got all this stuff built up, right? All these justifications for why he's doing this. He's always looking for an angle, and no one can really trust him to not find fault with them. And then he only ends up matching with other people that are like-minded like him, and he never actually mentally connects with somebody. So at every level here, we are looking at the problems. We just looked at sarcastic being the biggest part of that problem. So Aaron's a very sarcastic person. And how does that sarcasm create issues for him or create conflict for him? And then we looked at the very smallest thing is, how does certainty create conflict for him? And then we have a little bit bigger size there with permission. You know, permission causes a little bit more kind of conflict for him. And then bigger than that is the conceiving, is trying to get people to get the idea that he is a lovable person or that he's the catch of the year. And that's a bigger problem. So you make those problems bigger as you move up, and you make them smaller as you move down. But at the heart of it, they're all problems. So that's it for this week. So if you want to supercharge your conflict and you want to use Dramatica, there's just the two big items that you have to do. The one is you have to actually encode the story point that you're working on by taking those three things, the through line, the appreciation, and the structural item, and use that as context for creating a problem. And then the second part is just looking at the magnification of the problem that you're working on at that point. How big is it, and how much does it affect that through line? That's how you're supposed to use Dramatica. You'll notice I only dealt with the main character through line here. So what I'm going to do in the article this week is show how you do it differently for the influence character through line and the relationship story through line and then the overall story through line. There's subtle differences between them, but they're very, very strong differences, and they're the reason why they're in different through lines. So thank you once again for joining us, and we will see you next week.